to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. Thanks for joining us today. We're beginning the show by talking about the book, the novel, titled I Know What You Did. And the author is with me right here in the studio, Casey Osborne. She's a writer, of course, a graphic designer. She works in science communication at UW-Madison and has written a crackerjack book here. And I hope you'll join in with your questions as we move along. It hasn't been out for a long time. I hope you've had a chance to read it. If you haven't, join in. What questions do you have maybe about writing thrillers? If you've read the book, what did you think about the ending? Kind of fooled me, caught me off guard. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. It's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can send us an email to ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Casey Osborne, welcome. Good to have you with us.
Thank you so much. I'm really happy to be here.
I love the premise of this book. As soon as I saw the premise, I couldn't wait to dig into it. And maybe just to start, give our listeners the broad strokes of the story.
Sure. So it's about a woman from Madison who did not have a happy childhood, and she has many secrets regarding what happened to her as a kid. And she gets out of Madison as soon as she can, moves to New York, tries to make a life for herself despite her troubles. And she's doing all right. She's coping until a new best-selling novel spills all those childhood secrets. And not only does it spill them, but it uses her real name. So she knows it's only a matter of time before people will connect her with what happened to her as a kid. So she returns to Madison trying to figure out who wrote this book, because it's a pen name. The person who wrote it is using a pen name. And why, after all this time, would someone dredge up all that stuff from her past?
Yeah, it's a great premise. What gave you the idea for it, by the way?
a combination of things. I read a lot, and so reading something like Magpie Murders by Anthony Horowitz, and if you've read it, you know, yeah, in the beginning he almost tricks you a little bit. You start reading one book, and then it switches, and you realize you're reading the book within the book.
Yeah.
And I love novels about books, and I wanted to write one. And so I thought, what take could I come up with? What hook would be interesting for readers who also love to read books about books?
And it's set, the book's set in, well, at first in New York, but then mostly in Madison. And you describe both with a fair amount of familiarity. And you've spent a heck of a lot of time in Madison.
I have, yes, yes. I have never lived in New York. I visited there. And so that was the bulk of my research when I was writing it, because I could write Madison from feeling and from memory. But New York, I had to really map out, okay, if she lived here and she worked there, what streets would she take to get to work? If she was going on a walk, how would she get from here to there? That sort of thing. And I tried to figure out how a person like her name is Petal, how would Petal live in New York when she's really trying to hide from anything that resembles, you know, her family, her upbringing, anything like that?
And of course, in Madison, the kind of the cool thing about one of the cool things, I should say, are the street names at Rowley and Monroe Street.
Sure.
And then the school forest that I've been to.
Yeah.
So
I get a lot of people saying, is that a real thing? Is there really a school forest? Even people in Madison. And I say, yes, of course.
And of course, the high school and even Bagels Forever, I think, comes into it.
Yes.
So that's kind of have you had comments from listeners or from readers about that?
Yes, absolutely. People, and I'm including myself in this, people love to read about their hometown or places they're familiar with, because it makes them feel a special kinship with the book. At least that's how I see it. And I've had lots of people enjoying all those. It's almost like an Easter egg, if you know that term. Something slipped into a movie or a video game or something that's special that you can sort of find. And, you know, the book works for anyone from anywhere, but if you're from Madison, I feel like it has a little special meaning. You know, those places that you may go to on a daily basis or those streets you might drive every day.
And in the book, Petal doesn't like the city. Madison. I noted in your acknowledgments that you apologize to Madison.
Yes.
Because you love Madison.
Yes.
So how did you approach writing that part of the book? I mean, it must have been a little difficult.
It was. It almost started like a writing exercise. I wanted to write someone who was very different from myself because I found that a lot of the characters I wrote had my same instincts and my same thoughts if I had been in those situations. So I wanted to write someone very out of the box, someone who would react differently in situations than I would. And so when I knew I wanted her to come back to Madison and set the mystery here, I wanted her to be authentic to who she would be, which is she wouldn't want to come back here. Her memories would not be good. And even if I put things like Michael's frozen custard, which I have very fond memories of, in there, she maybe would not feel the same way. It would bring up difficult memories for her.
Well, it's pretty cool. The Petal, by the way, who apparently didn't like her name because she... How'd you come up with Petal?
Well, Petal is not a girly woman, not a feminine woman. She's a little hard-edged, you know. She doesn't mind speaking her mind at any moment. And so she definitely did not feel like she was a Petal. So she chopped her name to Petta instead. And I came up with the name because I needed something unique. I wanted her to have a very Wisconsin last name, so I chose Wisniewski, mm-hmm. and a very unique first name so that when she saw her name in the book, she would know it was her. Mm. You know, it's not Jane Smith, who it could be anyone. It's Petal Wisniewski, who could only be one person.
And even in New York, she's having people approaching her, say, including Gus, her boyfriend.
Yes.
Kind of boyfriend.
Mm-hmm.
I like that relationship that you did, I thought, did a fine job of... she's very unsure about Gus to begin with, but I really like how you drew that out through the course of the book.
Thank you. Yeah, she's not someone who trusts lightly or forms relationships easily, but I did want it to come, I wanted a good character evolution. So by the end, you know, she realizes she does have someone in her life she can trust and wants to trust. And I think the things that happened to her in Madison help her get there, as difficult as they are. She realizes that, you know, Gus is a really good person and she wants him in her life.
And the book, and of course there's murder in the book.
Yes.
People die.
Yes.
How should I say it? It's not a gory details kind of book at all, which I kind of appreciated, to be honest.
Yeah, I'm not a gory details person, not as a writer or as a reader, but I do like sort of the creeping dread or the eerie feeling you get in a space or a place. And so that's kind of where I like to direct my mystery. You know, I like the character evolution and I like the creepy, you know, how is she going to figure this out? Who is behind all this? Sort of solving that type of mystery rather than the blood and guts type.
You know, as I read, after I read, finished reading the book, I realized, or at least this is my perception, that about 70% or 75% of the book takes place inside her head, which has got to be a lot harder to write than when there are, you know, this person she's talking to or that person you're talking to and so forth and so on. So you have other characters to kind of move it along.
Yes, it's very internal, which I think some people who come to it hearing that it's a thriller have difficulty with because they want that pacing that's fast. They want those action scenes to come one after the other. And there's so much overlap between suspense and thriller and mystery and all of the subgenres there that this one kind of skirts a lot of them. It's a mystery about the book. It is, you know, a suspense when she's going through the steps internally, trying to figure it out. It's got a little bit of psychological thriller in it where people are sort of messing with other people's minds. It's one of those books that I don't think fits very neatly in any one genre, but, you know, readers can call it whatever they want. I'm happy to go along.
Well, she is a kind of a dark person in a lot of ways, but she also has a wry sense of humor. Would that be the way to put it?
I think so, yeah.
I mean, there's some humor in the book. I mean, it's right the first sentence.
Yes.
The first sentence is, well, you give me the first sentence.
Yes, it is, substitute gynecologists are the worst. Yes, I like to, you know, she is dark and there's dark things happening, you know, especially, you know, with her parents in her childhood. And I wanted to balance that because I didn't want it to be all dark. I wanted there to be some levity. And I think that's very human, you know, to battle darkness with humor. And I wanted to sort of bring that out. So I'm glad you thought that it was.
Yeah, funny. You did a really nice job of that. And she did. You know, she suffered a lot of trauma.
Yes, absolutely.
Early in her life, and you use the, I was trying to think about how to put this, the inside the book,
mm-hmm.
book, which was, that title, was No One Suspected?
Yes, correct.
No One Suspected. How's the book, No One Suspected, a physical manifestation of how the trauma affects her?
That's interesting. I mean, she is able to ignore it in her New York City life. You know, she has a very low responsibility job that makes her enough money to live. She has a relationship that she forces to be low commitment and low responsibility. And so she's able to skirt by, even though all these things are sort of clawing at her inside her. She's able to ignore them with all of her coping mechanisms, the action movies she likes to watch, you know, and the junk food she likes to eat, that sort of thing. But when the book arrives and she's unable to ignore it, I think it is sort of the manifestation of everything she's trying to hide become physical, right? It's something that she can no longer ignore because it's outside her head. It's in the world.
Yeah. And the book, the Inside the Book, sort of moves the story along. So that's how we learn sort of the background as we go through the sort of the quote present day part of the book.
Yes, most of the book within the book is, which is how I tend to refer to it. I know it's sort of awkward to explain. Is set in high school, her freshman year of West High School, when she meets these new friends. She's had to move from the east side of Madison to the west side because her parents both died, and move in with her aunt, who she doesn't have a real strong relationship with, and she's just trying to figure all that out. And the book within the book allows the reader to see what that life was like. Because Petal herself, because we're in her head, as you said, for most of the book, she would never volunteer that information. It just wouldn't be in character. So in order to get that out and, as you say, move the story forward, I had to use that as a device to sort of explain what happened to her.
Yeah, I thought it was really a great way to do it.
Thank you.
I love that part of it.
I love interesting structures and out-of-the-box narratives, you know, like epistolary novels that are told in letters, or just creative ways that writers find to tell a linear story. And so this was my way of interpreting that.
Well, we've got a book within the book, and the title of the novel is I Know What You Did. The author is Casey Osborne. Questions for her about the book, maybe about writing, I hope you'll join in. The number to call is 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert is our producer today, Trina LaSousa, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network. Great to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here with my guest, Casey Osborne. Her novel is called I Know What You Did, set primarily in Madison, Wisconsin. It's a gripping book. And I hope you'll join in with your own thoughts, questions. Maybe if you've read the book, I'd love to have you join in. But also, if you just have a question about writing, I'd love to hear that as well. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org, ideas@wpr.org. www.thebookbanks.org. Well, as we were talking about the book, a lot, I mean, the trauma for Petal occurs, that's life-altering, affects the rest of her life, happens at West High School in her freshman year. Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think back to my freshman year at Madison East High School, and I don't remember a whole lot about it. How did you, and see, did you go to West?
I did, yes.
So you went to West. So how did you bring in the, bring yourself, or take yourself back to freshman in high school?
I did make my main character the same age as I am. So it was, I made it easy on myself.
Yeah.
To make the, you know, my memories accurate. And I mean, like you, my memories are fuzzy, but I did remember certain things like the cool place to go grab lunch was Bagels Forever. I believe the bagels were 25 cents a piece then. You know, you'd drive over there at lunch, grab a couple bagels, come back, then go to the rest of your classes. I mean, I just thought about my friends, and I should be clear, none of my friends were like the friends in this book. And, you know, what we liked to do, the places we hung out. I did grab other experiences from other parts of my life. For instance, after sixth grade, I moved from the east side to the west side. Not quite like Petal did, but there was a move. Yeah. And so I kind of knew what that was like, shifting, finding new friends. And, you know, I did go to the school forest as a kid. I used that. And just, you know, that sort of thrill as a kid of being out after dark on your own, wandering around a familiar, you know, your familiar city, and that sort of first taste of freedom. All those personal experiences informed, you know, were very helpful in informing a character who, as I said, is very different from myself.
And one of the main characters, one of her best friends dies.
Yes.
And that, I think we can tell that, because that's pretty much right up front in the book.
Yes, that's kind of, that is, you know, the big secret that the book spills. But, you know, you don't find out the circumstances of exactly what happened to her friend until the very end. But that is what the book within the book is building toward. You know, it details that friendship and how it, you know, sort of falls apart and what happens to her friend in the end.
And, you know, and because of that and because of the Inside the Book book, and maybe just throughout the novel, Petal relies on several ways of coping. She smokes pot.
Yep.
She eats junk food.
Yes, she does.
She likes. Who's the movie? The killer movie. The guy. Gosh, I'm forgetting. The star of the one movie that she likes so much.
Oh, Keanu Reeves.
Keanu Reeves, and she actually uses Keanu Reeves as an exclamation.
Yeah, instead of saying, thank God, or whatever deity you might choose, she says, thank Keanu. Because she bonded with those, you know, movies like Speed, those early action movies, when he had a really good run. And she really uses those as a comforting, you know, before bed. If she's having a bad day, she'll just put it on no matter how many times she's seen it before. And so he's her, you know, he's her teddy bear, her comfort item.
So what are those coping mechanisms tell us about her?
That, you know, as much as she would like to believe she has left her past in Madison, it's always there inside her. And because she's never dealt with it, she never, you know, she lives like a teenager. She never really grew past that stage in her life. She's sort of, you know, arrested at that moment and, you know, has all these things she's never dealt with. So she seeks out these comforts, the junk food, the pot, the beer, you know, her ridiculous breakfast where she mixes together like three different sugar cereals and eats that, you know, all these things that make her body feel good. Because her mind is always in a constant state of trying to keep all those bad thoughts at bay.
And you play with the whole idea of trust, or the concept of trust, in the book. It's hard, and it is hard to tell who to believe in the book. The author of No One Suspected, which is the Inside the Book book, or pedal, for example.
Yes, who is telling the whole truth? You may still not know when you get to the end. You may know what happened, but you may not know where the actual truth lies. Yes.
Yeah. What makes a narrator trustworthy?
Oh, that's an interesting question. I mean, there's trustworthy as in they are telling you a story that you want to go along the ride for. You want to keep listening. That's one type of being trustworthy. They're telling you a story that you can believe and want to go on, and maybe you'll find out in the end that they are not actually trustworthy. But I think that, you know, as long as the reader feels like they are getting the truth, even if it's a personal truth, not the bigger truth, from the narrator, then I think that makes them trustworthy. And by that metric, I would say Petal is trustworthy because she's telling her own story as best she knows how.
And you wonder, given all of the, given all of the trauma that she's had, if she is really reading it, I mean, maybe she did more bad stuff than she recognizes.
Yes. I mean, she, in the end, without giving any spoilers, she does try and own up to what occurred. But at the same time, it is her version of events, and she's pretty much the only one left to be able to tell it. So do we believe her? I don't know. I think, you know, she's probably telling 90% of the truth.
There were about, I would say, 8 main characters in the book. Say your high school friend, Izzy, was it?
Well, it gets a little confusing because there's the people's real names and then the characters' names in the book within the book. And Petal is the only real person named, the anonymous author has sort of made, like, the real-life Megan is Miri or Miriam, and the real-life Jenny is Izzy. So they're sort of like sound-alike names.
And we should also mention that we don't know, and Petal doesn't know the author of the book. So she can't just call up the author and say, "What the heck are you doing here?" And we don't learn that until the end that the author is, well, we pretty much figure the author's a murderer, but but we don't know who that person is, and I never did figure it out until the, well, I didn't figure it out at the end. I figured it out when I read it.
Well, I'm glad I was able to fool you. That's a big compliment for a mystery writer.
Well, and so, and there's Gus, of course, there's Ben, who is a high school friend, and at that point, we get into more conversations back and forth among the various characters. The detective Gull, I believe.
Yep.
And then Megan's brother and sister are play a role. So there's enough it, but you figure it out. It's got to be probably it's going to be one of those 8.
Yes, I mean, that's sort of the playbook, right? You lay out all the suspects, all the players that contribute to the mystery, and then you try and leave those red herrings in there that will direct the reader to one or the other as they read. Hopefully, you know, hinting toward the real culprit, but not giving it away too early.
Yeah. So this is your first, I think this is your first published book.
Correct.
Tell us, I mean, you've written others.
Yes, I wrote about 5 books before this, just trying to figure out how to do it. I'm sort of a learn-by-doing person, and is you know, there are great craft books out there that help you with writing, especially if you need help in a certain area, like developing characters or things like that. But I just needed to do it and figure out not only how to write a book, which is, you know, it's an undertaking. It's a long, you know, it's not a short story. It's quite long. It requires a long-term commitment. But also what type of book I wanted to write. You know, I tried young adult novel. I tried a sci-fi. I tried sort of a women's fiction drama type thing. And when I realized that all of my books had this little hint of mystery in them, I realized, well, I should just try writing an out-and-out mystery and see where that takes me. And from the beginning, it just sort of felt like this is where I belonged as a writer, in the mystery suspense genre.
So would you, I guess I should, let me put it this way. What would you recommend, or what advice do you have for first-time novelists? Write 5 books in different areas and then figure
out. Well, two things I would say is read, especially if you know what genre you want to write in. Read those books and figure out sort of their rhythms and the writers you admire and how they do what they do. Sort of dissect those books that you love. And also, just try to not give up. That was the biggest thing for me, is I've wanted to write a book for a very long time. And, you know, I was busy with this or that. I was having children. I have a full-time job. And every time I thought I hit on the right idea, the one that would be the book, I lost confidence, you know, a few months in. You know, maybe 15,000 words in. I thought, this doesn't deserve to be a whole book. How can I make this 80,000 words? How can I stretch this? How can I enrich it? And I lost confidence and I just let them go. And then one day I was nearing 40 and I thought, now or never, I'll just do it. Even if I lose confidence, even if this book is going to be terrible, I will just do it to prove to myself that I can write a book. And that's how I wrote that first book.
So, and I know what you did. Well, in No One Suspected, the author of that book, did you know when you started who the murderer was going to be? Or is that something that developed over the... In other words, did you kind of have an, all right, this person or whatever?
I had it, without giving spoilers, I had it partially. And I had sort of where I wanted to end up. I knew what I wanted the last scene to be, where I wanted it to take place. It's somewhere I spent time as a kid in Madison. That's sort of one of those hidden places that not everyone knows about. And if you've read the book, you probably know what I'm talking about. But I knew where I wanted to set it, and I sort of had the feel for the ending and partially who the bad guy was. But as I wrote and I brought in other threads, it sort of expanded from its original thought in my head, but mostly I think I knew where it was going.
Where did your love of books come from?
I mean, pretty much all of my family members I've seen read, you know, I saw reading growing up. There were books in my house, there were books taken on vacation, you know, in my grandparents' houses there were books. It was just sort of part of life. And you know, when I made my own move from the East Side to the West Side and I didn't know anyone, one of the places that I felt safe was the school library. It just so happened that the librarian at my middle school lived across the street from my grandmother. So I knew the librarian. She was someone in the school I knew. So I felt like the library was a safe place. So I spent time there. I pulled books off those shelves. And even though I always knew that books, you know, were this thing that were part of life, that was the point that made me realize that they would be part of my life and that I needed them. I needed those stories, and they were something that you know, I couldn't be without.
Our guest today is Casey Osborne. The book, I Know What You Did. Questions or comments? I hope you'll join in. Maybe you've got a thought. Give us a call. The number is 800-642-1234. Or you could email us, the email address, ideas@wpr.org. Do you have some favorite writers that you go to, mystery writers, and maybe why?
Yeah, this is always a difficult question because there are so many. But I do love, I had mentioned Magpie Murders, but another inspiration for this book, and Petal in particular, was Sarah Grand's Claire DeWitt series, her troubled detective, Claire DeWitt. The first book is called Claire DeWitt in the City of the Dead, where the character has to go back to post-Katrina New Orleans and find a missing person. Was one of those books that I went into with not a lot of expectations, and it blew me away. It did things that I didn't think that a mystery book could or maybe should do. It was something new to me, the way she built this character and the way she brought in these interesting threads from the character's past and the influences that led directly to her actions as an adult. And so that sort of inspired me to create this character. So I love everything that Sarah Gran writes. If you're into sort of historical mysteries, I love the Deanna Rayborn novels, the I'm blanking on their name right now, but Deanna Rayborn's a great mystery writer who does lots of historical stuff, if that's what you're into. I read widely in lots of genres, and I love literary fiction as well. I like Ruth Ozeki and Lily King. And if you're into dark fairy tales, Kelly Link is excellent.
Well, Jill Nadeau just texted me and said, Deanna Rayburn rocks.
Oh, awesome. Yes, she really does. She has this great sense of humor. Veronica Speedwell, I believe, is the books that I was thinking of.
Petal for Oliver Darkness does have a sense of humor.
She does. It's sort of a defense mechanism, sort of a witty comeback to people who may be annoying her or standing in her way. Yes.
I love that part of it. Well, what are ways that readers can support authors?
Obviously buying books is one, but there are lots of no-cost ways as well. Pretty much every library system will have a way that you can request books. If a book you're looking for is not in your library system, you can request that the library buy it. That's very helpful. I know that a lot of people get tired of hearing this, but reviewing on review sites really does help. Goodreads, Amazon, Barnes & Noble, anywhere that you can post a review of your thoughts on the book will help get more exposure. It'll help other readers when they go visit that web page. They'll see a review and say, oh, that sounds good. I want to read that. Talking about it on social media, if you're a person who has social media pages, is helpful. Telling your friends that you enjoyed the book. I mean, really just talking about it in whatever venue feels right to you is really helpful.
And it's just a couple other questions. You work in science communication. I just wondered if that has that work shaped in any way the way you write the fiction?
I would say that I do write short stories as well. And some of the short fiction I've written is shaped by that. This particular book, I don't think so. Although, I'm always, fascinated by the ways that our work and life shape what we write in ways we may not understand. But I would say some of my previous books, especially the science fiction stuff, in the way that I communicated some of those more difficult concepts, that has definitely helped. Who knows, maybe in the future, something a little more science-oriented. We'll see.
So you have an event. I know you have an event, at least one event coming up.
Yes. I've been fortunate enough to visit some book clubs, so I have some of those private events coming up. But also this Saturday at the Wanakee Public Library, there's an author showcase happening with a bunch of local authors. Some of them are doing readings. Everyone will be there selling books, signing books, waiting to talk to readers, have a chat about anything you'd like. So, yes, Wanakee Public Library this Saturday, starting at 10 o'clock.
This Saturday at 10 o'clock, and there's no football game, Badger football game.
Right, yes, good. So everyone who would go to the football game, please come to the library.
Oh, and what are you working? A writer never seems to quit. Everybody I talk to, I ask, yep. You working on anything? And they always, pretty much always say, yeah.
Yeah, always something, right? Yes. From the time I sold this book to the time it came out, it was about a year. So I spent that year and all that nervous energy waiting for release day, writing a new book. It's set in more northern Wisconsin, about a woman who goes through a little bit of a midlife crisis and buys a rundown summer camp and decides to open it for adults who want an escape similar to what she wanted. Get out of their real life, get into nature, and then, of course, eerie things start happening at the camp.
Mayhem ensues.
Exactly. So that one's finished. That hopefully will be the next book coming out. And then, yes, I did start something new as well, and I'm in the middle of that right now.
Well, Casey, I tell you, it's been a pleasure talking with you today. I really enjoyed reading your book. I Know What You Did is the title of the book. And and people should be able to get Crooked Lane Publishing out of New York.
Yeah, right? Crooked Lane Books is my publisher. They distribute widely, so if it's not on your local bookshelves, bookstore shelves, it will be on Amazon, Barnes & Noble. I like to advocate for bookshop.org because they connect with local indie bookstores and give part of the profits there. So I would say go there. And, you know, locally, I know it's at Barnes & Noble and Mystery to Me on Monroe Street.
Well, it's been a real pleasure talking with you today. You fooled me, Casey, on who did it. And I enjoyed very much reading the book. And it was fun. Not only the Madison connection, but just the way you put it together. It's well written. Thank you.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
Casey Osborne, the author, the title, I Know What You Did. And maybe you know something about names of towns and names of cities here in Wisconsin. We'll take a look at the story behind many Wisconsin places that have Native American origins to their names. And that's coming up next. I'm Larry Mueller for the Ideas Network.